Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miroboard. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miroboard?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Welcome to OK Sis Podcast.
Hi, sisters. I'm Maddie.
And I'm Scout.
And we are sisters IRL.
I'm the older one.
Yes, Scout. We know.
We're cultural observers.
And of curious minds.
Get ready for sisterly banter while we chat about fixations, learnings, and personal growth.
We promise it'll be a good time.
As long as you don't get too loud, Mads.
Welcome to the sisterhood.
Hello, sisters. Welcome to the first installment of the OK Sis Book Club, where every month we will read a book together and discuss it on the pod with the author. This is Mads, and I'm riding solo today. I'm solo. Everyone knows that we're huge bibliophiles here at OK Sis, and we hope these bonus episodes will either get you out of your reading rut, make you fall in love with reading again, or introduce you to some genres that you may not have read before. This book club will be pretty romance novel heavy to begin with, because that's what I'm particularly interested in the moment. And it's my book club, so I make the rules. JK, I obviously want your input and any book suggestions that you have, and I will try to make it happen. As you may know, there is something so special about book clubs because you read the story privately and then come together to geek out over the themes or characters. And it's truly one of my favorite communities to build and also be a part of. If you aren't already, be sure to join our book club group chat on Bunches to discuss the book of the month along with other recommendations. There are so many awesome women in there, so we'd love to have you in the community as well. The link to join can be found in the show notes and on our Instagram, link in bio. Okay, April's book pick is The X-Talk by Rachel Solomon. I'm hoping everyone who is listening to this has already read The X-Talk, but even if you didn't, I think this will be a very fruitful conversation for you to listen in on. So to summarize the book, the story is centered around Shay Goldstein, who is a Jewish radio show producer at an established public radio station in Seattle, where she's worked for the past 10 years. And in order to insert some new life into the network, Shay pitches this fresh concept called The X-Talk, which is a relationship show and podcast hosted by two exes. Juicy. And after this pitch, her boss decides that Shay and her office rival, Dominic, should host the show and pretend that they have dated and are now exes because there's already like this tension between them. And we see them struggle not only to get along with one another, but struggle with the notion of lying to their listeners. And as the podcast and show grows in popularity, Shay and Dominic obviously fall in love. And the overall deception with their audience ultimately leads to the demise of the show. There are themes around truth and authenticity within the audio medium, which obviously Scout and I can definitely attest to. There are themes around resistance to change and feeling enough self-worth and confidence to actually step up and follow your dreams. And on top of that, it's a very charming and sexy love story, which does not hurt. All right, without further ado, let's get into today's discussion on The X-Talk with Rachel Solomon. Hello?
Hi.
Hello, Miss Rachel.
How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you so much for reaching out about this. I was so excited.
Oh my God. Well, we had to start off the book club with a book on Jewish podcasters. I mean, it only made sense. So thank you so much for being here.
Of course. Of course. How long have you guys been doing this?
This is, well, the podcast has been around for about 2.5 years. Yeah, for 2.5 years. And then we just decided to create this series where we do a book club once a month. It's a little bonus episode. So you're the first one.
Well, I am very honored. Thank you.
Okay, so we're here to talk about The X Talk, and I devoured this book in one sitting, which to me is an indication of a great read, and because I am a notoriously slow reader. So kudos to you. Very engaging story. Amazing.
Thank you so much. You know, it was such a blast to write, and it's the best compliment as an author to hear that it was a very fast read, because for this book, I wrote it so quickly, I hurt my hands.
No.
No, but, well, like my wrists, you know.
Okay,
Yeah, some intense typing. I wrote the first draft in 17 days. And
holy shit.
Then I made myself take a break because my wrists just like would not work.
And like
that.
Full carpal tunnel, like just full dead wrists.
Yes, wow. Yes.
So, you know, I get so excited to talk to authors because I feel like reading is such this like personal and intimate experience. It's something that you do alone. And then when they're, you know, you've jolted back to reality, you realize that the words were created by someone else. And it's such a bizarre realization. And I can imagine it is kind of similar for the author. I mean, you're writing this book, it feels like your baby. And then when people start to read it and extract meaning and, you know, interpret it in different ways, I can only imagine it can feel so strange. What do you resonate with that at all?
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's also really fascinating because the schedule that a lot of authors are on, you're often two books ahead of the book that's coming out. So you're seeing people react to it. Meanwhile, you are in a totally different world. So there's just a bit of like readjustment that you have to do in your brain. Be like, oh yeah, those characters.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not like I just send them off and forget them. I mean, this book in particular, and then a book that my book Today, Tonight, Tomorrow that came out before this one, those ones just live in my brain most of the time because those characters just really like stuck with me. And they're like, you know, there's huge pieces of myself in all of them. So like to forget the characters is like forgetting a part of yourself almost.
Absolutely.
But I do feel like I kind of go through a mourning period whenever something is completely done. And I always think back to being in like AP US history in high school and learning that like the Constitution is a living document. And for whatever reason, just that's, you know, that phrase living document really stuck with me. And I really feel like books are a living document. You know, this manuscript can change so many different times until that final pass that you do through it. And then all these different versions of it that have lived in your head and the different thing that the characters might have done, like no one else will know what those are. You know, no one else will know that there was like a karaoke scene in a very early draft of the X Talk that never made it through. So it's like those characters never do karaoke right now, but in my head, like
they do. It still lives. Yeah. I mean, so it's a story. And I mean, I could definitely relate to the whole, like the book hangover feeling. Like if when I'm done with such a good book, there is this morning that you're just, you know, it's complete, it's done. And yes, the reader can kind of, you know, imagine what would happen next, but there is this like finality to it that feels very much like a hangover to me.
Yes, definitely. And I experience that all the time with reading. I'm like, I think I get a lot of like anticipatory hangovers where I just know that a book is going to wreck me. And then at the end, I'm going to just be lying on the floor. sometimes I'll just try to like delay that as much as possible. But yeah, it's a very strange feeling because it's like that living document until it's final and then you send it off. And then there's a period of, you know, several months where nothing is happening, you know, it's all being produced and formatted and all of that. And then people start reading it and interacting with it. And that's when it kind of comes to life again. And it really, it takes on all these you know, it was all these different versions in my head, and then it becomes all these different versions in other people's heads. And that's really exciting too, is seeing what people latch onto. You know, right. A lot of people have connected with the Jewish elements of the story, which is always really wonderful to see, because, you know, growing up, I didn't really see modern Jewish books with characters just like casually being Jewish and living their lives. Like, it was all just Holocaust books. So I love hearing from Jewish readers, and then people picking up on things that, you know, I didn't necessarily think would resonate as much as they did. Like the grief subplot mm-hmm. was, I've been really struck by people who've reached out to me about that.
The other day, my cousin looked at me and asked if I got a treatment in my hair. I said no, but I am taking Nutrafol. You see, sisters, I had some shedding issues postpartum when it came to my hair, so I made it my mission to support my hair growth and strengthen my hair. I mean, Mads, you saw my hair last time I was up in LA, and you even complimented me. Which, sisters, you know that when Mads compliments me, it's a big deal.
I do have to give this one to you, Scout. Your hair is looking thick, strong, and beautiful. When it comes to hair thinning, it's complicated. The problem is, it's actually much bigger than your hair alone. Like your skin, hair is a reflection of your health, and internal factors can impact the way your hair looks, feels, and grows. Nutrafol's whole body approach multi-targets underlying root causes like stress, hormone fluctuations, and nutrient gaps for visibly thicker and stronger hair.
Every morning after I eat breakfast, I take 4 pills, and it becomes a seamless addition to my morning routine. But the reason I decided to go with Nutrafol when supporting my hair health is that Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster-growing hair with less shedding. Oh, also, Nutrafol makes the best Mother's Day present, especially for new moms. The perfect way to show them that you care about their postpartum support.
Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month's subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code OKSIS. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code OKAYSIS. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code OKSIS. I want to talk about the Judaism aspect. I was going to ask this later, but I think this is such a great segue. And I definitely resonated with that as well, right? I love how Shay's Judaism is not the center of her identity, but it's rather like an extension of her culture or her family. It's kind of like just like hinted in a little bit. And it was mm-hmm. so funny because I was reading it over Passover, and then she was like at a Seder, and I'm like, this is meta. But it's the way that I identify as Jewish, right? Like, there's the cultural element to it. It's not necessarily about living by this religious doctrine. It is part of just ourselves. And mm-hmm. I agree with you. It was very apparent to me when it was just sprinkled in. It felt very casual, and not like you were trying to like shove Judaism or like the actual religion down people's throats. It was more so just like, this is something that she is.
Yes. And all of my characters, so this was my fourth published book, my first adult novel, and all of my characters have been Jewish to varying degrees of observance. So my first published book, You'll Miss Me When I'm Gone, it's kind of a heavier contemporary YA novel. The characters are conservative Jews, and I did a lot of research, had a lot of readers, because it was not something that I had experienced. I'm Reform, and these days I'm pretty secular. So I wanted to make sure I was getting all of those details right. And I think it was just because I, you know, grew up reading books without Jewish characters, or it was either a Holocaust book or it was a one-off where it was just like, Hannah can't hang out on Friday nights because she's Jewish.
Right. Yeah.
I was like, okay, that's all we get. It's one of these two things. So I think my reaction was just, I'm going to make these characters very observant, because that was actually the first, I had written things before that, but my first, I think it really, there was a reason that that book was my first published book. And I think part of that was because those characters were Jewish, and I was just putting, it felt more meaningful, to me as an author. So yeah, all my characters, varying degrees of observance, a lot of them are struggling with feeling like Jewish enough, which, just speaking with a lot of my Jewish friends, I know that's something a lot of us struggle with. And I just like finding new ways, you know, when I'm starting a new book, figuring out, okay, how does this character relate to their religion? How has it impacted their family? What are their traditions? What are some of the traditions that they might share with a love interest? And is that love interest Jewish? Because sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't. So yeah, it's a really important part of like character building and novel world building to me.
Yeah. I love that that's a through line in all of your books, that you make it a point to either include Judaism in some facet. You said that the audience was like particularly in the X Talk very, you know, gravitated towards Shay and her identity. What have you been hearing from people? Are people, because I know that you have something on your Instagram where you encourage, you know, Jewish readers to reach mm-hmm. out. So how has that impacted the perception of the book?
One thing that is really made a bigger point in the publishing world right now is getting Own Voices books to Own Voices reviewers. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with that term or if that's something you guys have talked about, but I can definitely define it.
Yeah, define it, please.
Yeah, for sure. So Own Voices means an author shares an author, or I guess any type of creator, shares a marginalized identity with their main character. So it would not be the case if, like, you know, you were writing a side character and a non-point of view character. So, you know, my books are Own Voices for Judaism, and it's really important to me to be able to get early copies of those books to Jewish Own Voices reviewers. Because it's just, I think there's just a history of, it's especially apparent for, authors of color and readers of color, but like there's a history of like those readers not being prioritized, and there's a really big push for all marginalizations, so like disabled readers having access to books with disabled characters, you know, queer readers getting access, early access to books by queer authors, and it's something that I am really passionate about, because I love hearing from Jewish readers. And it wasn't until after my first book came out and I heard responses from Jewish readers that I kind of promised myself that I would only write Jewish characters, because so many of the people who contacted me had never seen Jews in contemporary books that were not about the Holocaust or that were not about some big tragedy.
Yeah, I never even heard that term. That's an incredible, I guess, practice. So when you give early access to these readers, you're just sending them before it launches, for instance?
Yeah, so it's usually a conversation that I'll have with my publicists. Amazing. You know, hey, can we get a special, you know, widget for these early readers to download an advanced copy of the book? And everyone's been really supportive.
Love that.
Yeah,
okay,
great.
Let's get into the story. First, we got to talk about radio and podcasting. Obviously, this whole book centers around the power of audio. I am obviously very avid and a consumer and a content creator within this space, so I know a lot about it. I think something that stood out to me and was a theme that came across multiple times is this like truth in audio and podcasting and storytelling. I guess I never really realized it until I read this book, but I was like, oh yeah, of course. Like there's no way that our podcast, Okay Sis, happens without vulnerability, without authenticity, without truth. It's just these long form conversations have to be rooted in truth. And you know, obviously we might put on a character, there's like a little over dramatizing of yourself, but it's still yourself. And I saw how much Shay struggled with that. And I can only imagine, you know, having to lie to, you know, a community that you've built and that you have grown with, and then basically deceiving them. And I can understand how it chipped away and ultimately led to the demise of the show. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, your relationship with podcasting or radio, why you felt to put a whole book centered around it.
So a lot of this goes back to my love of journalism and how I got into journalism. And I was really drawn to stories about people. And I had some experience working in news and in breaking news, and it just was not for me. So whenever I wrote a story, I just always started with like some interesting detail that I found out about a source as I was talking to them. And I think this really carried through to my love for podcasts too, in that I was really drawn to hosts and, you know, I would even say characters, because you're kind of playing a different version of yourself when you're podcasting. I was really drawn to people that I felt like I had a connection with because they were talking about something that mattered to me or that I could relate to. And I love that about podcasting, where you just feel like it is this really intimate relationship. I don't know if it's just because you can put headphones in and completely block out the rest of the world, and it's just like they are talking only to you. But there's just something like very just special about that feeling. And I started listening to podcasts. I was somewhat of a late adopter. They were definitely getting big by the time that I started listening to them as a senior in high school. And I just only wanted to work in radio. Like I make a joke about this in the book, but like I wanted to work on This American Life. That was my that was my dream job. And I think that is the dream job of many people who go into public radio. But the real challenge with this book was, especially coming as someone with a journalism background, where truth and ethics are just hammered into you at every turn. And, you know, it's a requirement to take journalism ethics classes. You know, I realized pretty early on that it was kind of a problem that Shay and Dominic are lying and deceiving so many of their listeners. Mm-hmm. And I think that part of that is so many romantic comedies have like this scheming element to them. And I think what I love so much about them is that is just a built-in way for your character to have to grow by the end of the book, where they start out scheming and maybe doing something wrong for what they think are the right reasons, and they're able to justify it to themselves. And then the growth that they experience by the end of the book, they're able to, you know, come out of that scheme and realize what they did was not 100% right. And yeah, they've just evolved at that point. So it was kind of those two layers of like analyzing the truth of it all, and this lie that they're building, and how they were able to talk themselves into it. And then just that really classic romantic comedy element that I think I always think back to kind of like the rom-com, I would call it a golden age, I guess, of like late 90s, early 2000s. Like so many of those rom-coms have like that scheming element to them, right? Like Never Been Kissed, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. They're all built on just like sneakiness and lying.
It's so true. I mean, you mentioned rom-coms, and you also said that this was your first adult novel that you wrote. And I've recently become such a fan of romance novels. And I think the reason I hadn't gotten into them until now is because, and I hope this doesn't offend you because I'm such a fan of the genre, but there is like this stigma and misconception mm-hmm. around romance novels that they're, you know, like intellectually inferior, or there's like chick lit. Like it's just this like demoralizing term. And whereas I have found them to be so delightful, such engaging reads, and honestly, an incredible form of escapism that I can't get anywhere else. And mm-hmm. I want to hear about what excites you about the romance novel genre, because when I read books like yours, the prose is beautiful. You're an incredible writer and storyteller. So I hate that that romance novels have gotten this rap. And I think things are definitely shifting. There's just such an amazing landscape of authors. I mean, Jasmine Guillory, Helen Hoang, and, you know, Sally Thorne, all these amazing women. So I want to kind of hear about your thoughts around the genre itself and how it's evolved.
Yes. Well, I'm really glad that you asked this question, because the book that I had come out before this one, Today, Tonight, Tomorrow, which is a YA romantic comedy, the main character wants to write romance novels, and it's something that she hides from people because she's worried about the stigma. So that book deals with like this exact topic. But it's something that I feel really, I just love talking about this because I think you're totally right that there is a stigma. And I think so much of it stems from the way that romance novels have been marketed and the way that is shifting. You know, over the past probably less than 5 years, we've seen a really dynamic shift in romance novels where they are being sold as trade paperbacks instead of the smaller mass market paperbacks that you would find at, you know, Walmart Airports. Or a drugstore somewhere, something like that. And instead of the kind of classic cover that we would envision where, you know, it's two people embracing or, you know, a shirtless man or something, we're getting these like brightly colored illustrated covers that, you know, a lot of what I've heard from like my agent, from my editor, from other people in publishing is these are really targeted toward millennials who would not have picked up a romance novel in the past. You know, you and I are not the target demographic of the, you know, Walmart mass market paperbacks. Like millennials just aren't often picking those up. It's not the kind of book that you really, there's just so much stigma in like reading that kind of book in public. So a lot of these trade paperbacks, what's really interesting is they're so similar to what chick lit used to be, which is a label no one is really using anymore. But they also have a lot more steam. You know, I think a lot of chick lit was very closed door, whereas many books with illustrated covers, I mean, the illustrated cover is usually not at all an indication of like how sexy it is.
Definitely not. No,
it's like very innocent cover. And then it's just like, oh, wow. and I'm not complaining because like, that's, I mean, there's no quicker way for me to read a book than someone's like, oh, it's very steamy. I'm like, okay, it's in my cart.
Same girl. Same.
But it's such a fascinating shift. And I am sure there are many great think pieces about it. But I really think the two books that I would even say three books. They've actually, the three authors that you mentioned, I think that Jasmine Guillory, Helen Huang, and Sally Thorne have kind of, their books really broke out in such huge ways. And there are some other publishers that I think are still trying to catch up, but the major publishers all have multiple imprints that will put out these trade paper, and a lot of them are calling them romantic comedies instead of romances. It's really an exciting shift to be a part of. And even when I was drafting this book in 2019, I knew exactly the kind of book that I wanted it to be. Like, I was like, okay, I want this to be trade paperback, illustrated cover type of book, because I think it's a romantic comedy. It has like a decent amount of steam. I think that's where it fits. It's also been interesting because I don't think a lot of people in the industry are wondering, is this bubble going to burst? Because there are just so many of these types of books, but romance readers are so voracious and people are just continuing to devour these. So I don't think it's in danger of bursting anytime soon, honestly.
I agree. I think it's been the one genre that I consume the fastest. I think I go through them like nothing else. And it's, you know, you feel like obviously you're reading, so you're, you know, you get a little pat on the back, but it's not this like arduous process, or I don't know, there's just something light about it, but it also feels relatable in a sense. I do want to talk about the steaminess and the logistics behind writing a sex scene, because I want to just know what your process is for this, because when I'm reading them, you know, you don't want it to come off cheesy. You don't want it, you know, to feel cringy, but there are just like certain elements, I think, and like a certain formula that you do have to follow in order to make sure the person, the reader feels like they're, you know, in it in a way. So where does the inspiration come from? How do you even start to write something like this?
I'm so glad you asked that. That's such a fun question. It's definitely not something I was asked about my YA novels. It's such a different experience because I'm tagged in reviews sometimes that are like, this book made me horny. I'm like, this is very different. You know, I'm not one of those authors that like needs to be drunk to write a sex scene. Like I can write it at 8 in the morning. I can write it. Actually, most of the X-Talks sex scenes were written on a flight to Pittsburgh in a middle seat between two older gentlemen.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
So, I mean, I can really write one anywhere. So my drafting process, my first drafts are very thin and just really bare bones. So I will often have a, just kind of sketch out how I want a sex scene to go. And I usually have like 2 to 3 in an adult book, because I like to, I just like kind of live for the moment when it just like feels different. That last time it's like, oh, now we're in love. Now this feels different. They're just, I think I always try to do something slightly, I say subversive, but I think subversive is a really hard compliment to give yourself. So I say that with like 1,000 grains of salt. Yeah. but I, you know, it's really important to me that like I write, you know, straight romances. So it's really important to me that the woman in the couple is the one in control and like, you know, having an orgasm first, and just it's really centered on her, which is also helpful because we're only in her head. I'm not open to writing a dual POV romance in the future, but so far it's just been one POV. And I also really like to kind of flip the gender expectations. So I love, I love a beta male. Alpha males are great, but like I'm 100% here for a beta male. So I love writing men who are less experienced. I love virgin heroes. Just anytime that the woman can be the more experienced one, or the one who's sort of like showing them either how it's done or like what she enjoys. I think one reason people love romance novels is they're just so tremendously empowering. So,
and it's refreshing. It's refreshing to hear that perspective. I think a lot of, you know, women, maybe the only access to, I don't like to call it erotica because it doesn't really feel like that, but our only access has probably been porn or these mm-hmm. very graphic type of stories where it is male dominated. It is very male heavy. And so to read stories about a woman's pleasure and consent and a woman taking ownership, it sucks that it's refreshing, but it is very refreshing to hear that. And especially Shay being, you know, a little older than Dominic, mm-hmm. it's a very interesting dynamic that I just don't think that we've seen. And I've been reading so many romance novels, so now I feel like there is this through line and there is this more empowerment aspect to it. All the women that I've read in these books, all these, the main female characters, the sexual experience is all about them, really. Mm-hmm. And that is just such an amazing shift, I think, in narratives, sex stories. I'm so glad that exists.
For sure. And one thing I want to add that's something that is also important to me is like giving equal weight to sex acts that are not just penetrative sex if the character.
Right. They didn't have sex the first time.
Right. And like, I would still call that a sex scene because it really, like a huge pet peeve of mine is when characters will just be hooking up and it's like, they're getting closer and closer, but it's like, oh, we haven't had sex yet. It's like, no, you definitely have. Because I also think that is, I just hope we're like rewriting the kind of expectations, especially when, you know, there are a lot more mainstream queer romances than there were in the past.
Like Casey McKiston, she wrote the book Red, White, and Royal Blue. Mm-hmm. And at first I honestly was hesitant to read it because I was like, oh, well, I relate to the sex scenes because they're between two men. And oh, yes, I did relate to them. And it was fantastic. So it's just like, yeah, there is this shift in just showing other stories and honestly, like, it makes it way more humanizing and it feels relatable. I don't know how else to mm-hmm. say it.
Yeah. Well, and another one that I would really recommend is Written in the Stars by Alexandria Belflor, which is a like opposites attract like FF romance that came out last year. That's really steamy and really good. But I just love because I think any time that a straight romance considers like penetrative sex the singular sex act, it just like completely takes away from all other like gendered couples and queer couples. And I am trying as like much as I can as like a straight white author to leave that space for other people, and like just wanting any reader to feel safe in my books.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And I really respect that you've done that, because I mean, we just had the founder of Dame Products on OK Sis, and it's a pleasure forward vibrator company, but we were talking about how, you know, majority of women don't even orgasm from penetrative sex. So it's, and we see time and time again, every piece of media, every rom-com you see, they're just like coming right away with the man at the same time through missionary. And I'm like, like, that's not like, so it's nice and refreshing to see other ways that women can find pleasure other than penetrative sex. So I really respect that.
Yeah. And like, I honestly didn't even know that many women couldn't like orgasm that way until I was in my mid-20s, and it was romance novels that
people
I
don't talk about
from.
It. Yep. Romance novels, you know, just teaching us everything these days, really. Okay. I want to do a little bit of rapid fire before we end here. I got to ask, what are some of your favorite podcasts?
Okay. So my top podcast at the moment, and has been for a while, is the Bechdel Cast. It is a feminist movie podcast hosted by two comedians, and they are hilarious, and they dissect both, you know, popular movies and just like totally bonkers out there movies. And it's not just them sitting there being like, does this pass the Bechdel test? Yes. Okay, cool. They really dig deep with all kinds of representation. And lately they've made a push to be a lot more intersectional and just more diverse in the kinds of movies they cover and the guests that they have on the podcast. But if anyone has not listened to it and wants to, I recommend starting with an episode of a movie you either really love or a movie you really hate, because those tend to be the most fun. I also really love, it's a slightly older podcast, but for any Gilmore Girls fans out there, Gilmore Guys is one of my all-time favorite podcasts. I absolutely love it.
So good. I agree. Okay. This might, well, I'll just ask it and you tell me what you think. What does literary success look like to you?
That's such a great question, because I am someone who is perpetually hard on myself. And my therapist is always telling me to like celebrate things, and she's like, go get yourself a cake. Something good happened. Like, go.
Yes. Celebrate the small wins. It's all we have, honestly.
Yeah. You know, what I always keep coming back to, and at the beginning of every year, I make both like a goals list for the year and kind of like an ongoing dreams list, because I don't like to call it resolutions, because there's so many things that are out of my control. Like, I can't resolve to hit a bestseller list. That's not something I'm personally, it would be amazing if I could control it, but I cannot. But the one thing I keep coming back to is just like being able to keep doing this. And I think a lot of authors feel that way. Like, it just feels like a tremendous privilege to continue to write books and continue to hear from readers. Especially over the past year, when we've all been, you know, in lockdown, the emails that I've gotten from readers have just like completely, some of them, like many of them, have moved me to tears. And it's just, I feel so honored to get to do this. So the fact that this is my job, if it's able to stay my job, that is success for me.
Love that. Okay. What is your favorite underappreciated novel?
Ooh, that is a good one. I always feel like I have to pull up my Goodreads for these questions. I should know at this point to be prepared. This one, it actually bothers me that this one is not more widely read, but it's Public Relations by Katie Heaney and Ariana Rebellini. I think it's a romantic comedy that hit just a little too soon, or like a little too early, like before kind of that big boom. But it is so much fun. It feels like a less problematic Devil Wears Prada set in the PR world. And it's about a young publicist who is doing PR for like a Harry Styles type pop star. And it is just so fun. I absolutely loved it.
Okay, you sold me. That sounds, I mean, adding to cart ASAP. Okay, this one I've always wondered. How do you select the names of your characters? In particular, the X-Talk. Let's Shay and Dominic.
I have a list of names that I like. And sometimes I will pull from that. But sometimes those names just don't feel right. So for Shay, it's a name that I've liked for a long time. I remember there was a girl in like my art class in high school who was named Shay, and she was just very cool. She was just seemed so like untouchable. She was just like a very cool artist who just very reserved, and like if she ever spoke to you, it was just like, oh my God. And I don't know. Maybe I just like pocketed that name and I was like, okay, she's just, I don't know. I love the simplicity. I love simple names, and I also love androgynous names. So a lot of my characters have androgynous names, like Shay. My next main character my next adult main character is Ari. And then Dominic, I remember looking at lists of names and trying to find something that sounded good with Shay. I also like when they have different amounts of syllables, or at least like different lengths. It has to sound good to the ear, but it also has to look good to me on the page. And sometimes it takes a little while to get there. My editors are probably very annoyed with me because it is not unusual for me to send back a revision and be like, by the way, I changed these three characters' names, because they just didn't, they stopped feeling right to me. Or as I'm revising, sometimes I change, usually not the main characters, but like some secondary characters, I change their names so that the book feels fresh to me. Like a weird trick, but it works.
Yeah, because after you're looking at it for so long, I can imagine that you just need like some sort of reset of the words. Okay, and then what was the hardest scene to write in the X-Talk?
You know, the climactic scene when they are on stage doing their podcast live was a real challenge for me. Honestly, anything that has action is difficult for me as an author, because I really love, my favorite scenes are just two people sitting and talking. That sounds like so lazy, but I just love digging deep with dialogue and, you know, people's inner thoughts. And I love like little moments. So little moments where the relationship starts to shift, where, you know, someone touches you in a slightly different way and you're wondering like, oh
yeah, the like office kitchen scene. Yes.
I was like, what?
Oh my God.
But I love like, you know, overanalyzing the accidental touch, or just someone opening up to you in a way that they've never opened up to anyone else before. Those are my favorites to write. But action is very hard. Unless it's in a
I
bed.
Can imagine.
That is easy.
Action, unless it's in a bed. I love that. Well, thank you so much, Rachel, for joining me and doing this. This is like one of my, I love books and I love book clubs and talking about books. It's one of my favorite pastimes. So you mentioned that you have a new book coming out. Can you tell us a little bit about it, when we can expect to grab it?
Yes. Well, so actually, I have a YA novel coming out in June. That is called We Can't Keep Meeting Like This. And it is a wedding planning summer hijinks rom-com with a teen harpist and a cater waiter. And then I have another adult romantic comedy out in January called Weather Girl. And this one, I am working on it right now, and it is so much fun. It is about a meteorologist who teams up with a sports reporter to scheme to reunite their divorced bosses at their TV station. So it's sort of like Parent Trap at a TV station.
I mean, that's a great sell. Love it.
And,
perfect.
Yeah, those have been a lot of fun. And Maddie, thank
and where
you
can
for,
I?
Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. I was going to say, where can everyone find you? Tell them the Instagrams, just plug yourself.
For sure. So I am at RLYNN_Solomon, SOLOMON. I was going to say at gmail.com, but I'm like so used to no, that is my handle on Instagram and Twitter. And I'm rachelsolomonbooks.com.
Love it. Thank you so much for this. This was so fun. I hope everyone enjoyed this conversation. And be on the lookout for Rachel's new steamy books coming out.
Thank you, Maddie. This was such a blast. Thank you.
Do you ever feel like you're struggling through motherhood? You're not alone. I'm Erica Jossa, host of the MomWell podcast, therapist and mom of three. Join me each Wednesday as I sit down with guests, including psychologists, pediatricians, psychiatrists, fertility specialists, lactation consultants, and more to unravel the myths of motherhood. With expert advice, practical tips, self-love, and some coping skills to help you along the way, you can become the mother you want to be. Listen to the MomWell podcast at momwell.com/listen or on your favorite podcast platform.